student John Hopkins at Rutgers University. I'm also with Alexei Tsvelik in Oxford. And you can find the material of this talk in three papers and one preprint. So an experimental paper by Almut Schroeder from the group of APLI, which will be published soon. Two papers with Pierce and Alexei, and one preprint with also John Hopkinson and Conma. So, okay. Yeah, so in this talk, I would like to stress some parallel between the cuprates and the heavy fermions, with the point of view that there is evidence like both of these systems are close to a quantum critical point, and there are similarities and parallels between these two critical points. And then I would like to motivate why we think that these critical points are not well understood so far, and why we would need a new approach to describe them. So basically, you would need a new approach to describe quantum critical point between a system which goes magnetically on one side and would be a Fermi liquid on another side. And then I will discuss some application. So here, I gave a totally non-exhaustive list of people who actually worked or shared this idea, like you are close to the proximity to quantum critical points for these two systems. Can find the way. So as a lot of people are, maybe everyone here is familiar too, when you take the ITC cuprates and the heavy fermions, you can find some striking similarities between the two systems. So both systems have an antiferromagnetic phase, here for IPCO. And here I take one of the heavy fermions, cerium, palladium, 2, silicon, 2. And in many heavy fermions also, you have a little superconducting phase here, very small, because it's a heavy mass magnet, and it's difficult to form superconductivity. But as in ITC, these two systems have the two same phase. And above the superconducting phase, you have some very unusual properties of the metal. For example, to stress a parallel, the resistivities are linear in both cases. So in ITC, you're probably familiar with it, but for heavy fermions, I give you, there's many examples of that, but I give you one particular, which is a new compound, ytterbium, rutilium, 2, silicon, 2, when you see the resistivity striking linear down to very low energies. So this compound is almost exactly at the quantum critical point. And I would like to push the parallel further. I think there is some evidence, like for the ITC compound, you have some scaling in this system. So the two experiments I want to mention, like you have some photo emission experiment, and this kind of tail, the only energy scale which appears here is a temperature. And you can also look at the imaginary part of the self-energy, and you see that it behaves like maximum of energy or temperature. And if you plot both in the same diagrams, you see the function scale with omega over t. And also it was proved by Eidon. Like if you can extract the correlation length from the magnetic susceptibility at exactly optimally doped or nearly optimally doped compounds. So this one is for BISCO, this one is for lanthanum. But you would see also some scaling of the correlation length with T square plus omega square, which suggests an omega over T scaling. And actually this suggests a dynamical exponent C equal to 1, which would be the one you would obtain if you would describe a quantum critical point from an insulating magnet. So if it's true, it's not really well understood how you would have this exponent Z equal to 1. So for the system, for Z equal to 1, it would mean also that you have a system supposedly at two dimensions, and you would be well below your upper critical dimension. So just to remind you how these things work, I would say that there is hyperscaling, and just want to remind you briefly.
Before we go into this,
yes.
When we talk about quantum critical point, usually it's a phase transition between two phases.
Yes.
So what is the two phases?
Okay, you mean because there is a superconductor? Well, you mean experimentally? Nobody knows, actually. You have, okay. What is sure is in both systems you have magnetism and Fermi liquid at some point.
Yeah.
You have superconductivity too. Mm-hmm. So in this talk I will take the point of view that I want starting to describe the quantum critical point between magnetic and Fermi liquid phase. So just a magnetic quantum critical point. I will take the point of view that this is already not well understood, but it's just a point of view. You can add the superconducting if you want to, but it's more complicated. I'll take the simplest approach, like just magnetism and Fermi liquid. But if you look at the critical dynamical exponent from the neutrons, Z equal 1 would be the quantum critical point between an insulating and four magnet and a paramagnetic phase. So, proceed by that. Okay, so I want to remind you, yes.
So can you turn the light?
Oh, sorry. What I mean by hyperscaling, so if you take a classical system in with a critical temperature different from zero, you have an upper critical dimension above which the mean field theory is exact, and you have a lower critical dimension below which there's no transition. And in between the two dimensions, there is hyperscaling, which means that there is a relation between the critical exponents related to the thermodynamic quantities and the one which are related to the correlation length. And what is important key ingredient is that is there is only one divergence scale in the system, which can take, for example, the correlation length, which diverge as T goes close to Tc with this exponent mu. And all the physical quantities, like the free energy, the correlation function, will diverge, can be expressed in function of this only one divergence scale, which gives you some relation between the exponents. So now if you go to quantum mechanics, now Tc equals zero. And in addition, you get a time scale, which goes like 1 over the temperature. And if there is hyperscaling, you have still only one divergence scale. So you have to relate the time scale with the correlation length, and it is done with an exponent C called the dynamical exponent. So this relation between these two scales is done by dynamical exponent. So for example, if you would look at susceptibility or some correlation function, and you can prove that actually it's scaled as E over T or B over T, means like you can express all the physical quantity in terms of only one divergence scale, and all the others will be scaling function of some ratios of the quantities. So now I would like to emphasize that these properties like seem to appear in the cuprates, and you would think they are special of system at two dimensions. They also appear in heavy fermions, which are system, which have magnetic phase and Fermi liquid phase, and which are at three dimensions. So this seems to be more general properties. So first, for people who don't know here, I would like to remind you briefly some key features of heavy fermion systems. So theoretically, it could be described by localized spin, a set of localized spin, which bath in a sea of conduction electron, and which undergo some coupling between the localized impurities of the spin and the conduction electron. So basically, in this system, you have two scales. You have the Kondo temperature scale. Well, when you take one impurity, it will be screened by the sea of conduction electron. And on one phase of the phase diagram, it appears that the system of many impurities is screened. And what you obtain is a Fermi liquid with very renormalized parameter, like the mass is renormalized. And, well, all these properties are renormalized. And on top of it, there is another scale, which is, RKKY temperature or Neal scale, which is some interaction, Ruderman, Kittel, Kazuya, which are mediate from impurity to impurity via the conduction electron. So they can be incommensurate or antiferromagnetic, but in this kind of system, so the function of the coupling constant, you usually have a magnetic phase here, which is, for small coupling constant. So you can naively compare the Kondo temperature and the Néel temperature, and when the Néel temperature is higher, you would see that the system orders. When the Kondo temperature is higher, you'd say the system undergoes some Kondo screening and form a heavy Fermi heavy metal. Well, of course, it's a very naive argument, but so far, actually, we don't have really much more than that to describe the systems. So, well, something I didn't stress is the Kondo temperature means like below a certain temperature, your impurity would be screened and you would form a metal, but above it, the moment would become free and you would see some free moment system. So, what is interesting now is exactly at the point where the Néel temperature goes to zero, you would have a quantum critical point. The temperature of this transition point would be zero. So, just to remind you, so there are three-dimensional systems which have these two properties of magnetism, Fermi liquid, and this quantum critical point recently have been shown to be highly singular. So, what have been observed is linear or quasi-linear resistivities. You have some logarithmic corrections to the specific kit, and another one by Megan Aronson is still under investigation. But at least only one experiment where on one compound where the neutron scattering is available, you have a very, very clear evidence of scaling of E over T and H over T with unusual exponents. So as you see, there are a lot of compounds which show that. Just give you a flavor of how it looks like to prove I don't. So, okay, so this is for a class of compound, this is a linear or quasi-linear resistivities you have. So the exponent is not necessarily one, but can be close to one. And this is a specific hit.
Yes, okay.
Sorry? Yes, all these compounds go superconducting at some point. And okay, so this is for cerium copper 6 gold that we'll be studying. Just look at it right now. So you take a cerium compound and you dope it chemically with gold. And while you're doping, you create a kind of negative pressure. And at some point, doping XC here, you see an antiferromagnetic phase which appears. This has been established experimentally. And exactly at this point, XC, you have a quantum critical point with unusual behavior of the specific hit.
Did you manage to find the position of pressure?
Not for this compound. Yes, with pressure, there is a transition of cerium palladium to silicon to the first graph I showed you here is under pressure. But the point is, this compound goes superconducting. So, there is a little indeterminacy of exactly where is the quantum critical point. Okay, so for this system, cerium copper 6 gold, neutron scattering is available and has been studied thoroughly at the quantum critical point. And this is some work by Schroeder et al. In Nature. And you see there are two kinds of measurements. So they can measure the intensity of the scattering as a function of E over T. And you see beautiful scaling here of many values on actually one, two, three decades. And okay, so there is an overall factor of times T to the power dot 75, and all the value collapse on the same scaling function here. So they can do the same thing with the magnetic field here. And you see the same, some beautiful collapsing of all the values on the same graph. But what is more surprising for this system. So it's a system which gets ordering at the antiferromagnetic wave vector. And what is more surprising is this scaling fixture has been done for a lot of wave vectors in the brilliant zone. So actually, the scaling my function, the scaling property is valid at Q equal pi pi, which would be the antiferromagnetic wave vector, but it's also valid at Q equals zero. And for all the points on the brilliant zone which has been tested, it is valid, which would mean there would be a strongly local character of the scaling property, which is not understood. Yeah. So if I could resume the situation now, you have this compound, heavy fermions, which is three-dimensional, which goes onto hyperscaling, and also which has a very strongly local component of the scaling at the quantum critical point. And all the theories which are available so far to describe transition between an itinerant Fermi liquid and a magnet are Millis-Earth theories. And these theories all predict that you would be above your upper critical dimension. So you have absolutely no way of finding yourself with any scaling in the systems. And that's why we think this quantum critical point is not well understood, and you need to introduce new approach to understand it. Mind you, if you look at the TC with a z equal 1, you have exactly the same problem. If you would like to describe the problem as a system which is close to an antiferromagnetic critical point with an itinerant, the paramagnetic phase would be a Fermi liquid, then your critical dynamical exponent is given by z equal 2 and not z equal 1. So z equal 2 would give you in two dimensions for high T system which is exactly at your upper critical dimension, but experimentally the exponent which is observed is z equal 1, so you would need a system which is also below its upper critical dimension. So just to stress the analogy, but here what is striking is the compound is three-dimensional and that there is no way we can get below the upper critical dimension. So just to remind you, when you have a critical exponent C, they didn't say that, the upper critical dimension gives you by D plus Z equal 4. So D upper critical equals 4 minus Z. And if you have a theory like Millis-Earth, which would have Z equal 2 for the antiferromagnet, your upper critical dimension would be 2. So with this theory, for the high TC, would be exactly at the upper critical dimension, but for any of the fermion system, you would be upper, above. Yes?
So that statement is presumably true in a clean system, right? Well, at least all these things seem to be heavily doped and so on. Is that?
Yeah, you mean you would like to change your Z due to this order? But okay, I don't know this change.
Whether there's an upper critical dimension, whether scaling holds and so on. Not just be determined by some simple consideration that Z should be.
Well, you know, you probably know better than me all these fixed point, antiferromagnetic fixed point for the clean system. Once you put your disorder, they are unstable in this disorder. So you don't know toward where it will flow.
Right.
But if you take an approach like Akimrosh did for the heavy fermions, like if you have an infinitesimal quantity of disorder, you will flow as close as you can to the antiferromagnetic critical point. You still get the same.
So the clean.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is only a process that has been treated. You just go very close and you see how correlation functions are deformed by that. You will still get a system which is above its supercritical dimension.
But the true physical system may well be in the situation
yes.
with disorder.
Yes, but no, nobody has any ideas which fixed point, which true fixed point is a disordered one. That's a good remark.
Well, the other thing is that you showed the data where you had scaling but of the spin susceptibility with
yes.
the field over the temperature.
Yes.
And now I guess, I mean, theoretically that would be true only if you had spin rotational invariance.
Yeah.
Right. Which perhaps is surprising given that these are composed with heavy elements and may expect lots of spin orbit scattering and so on.
I think for the compound with ceriums, you don't expect that much spin orbit scattering. Cerium is a much simpler compound than the uranium compounds.
So HMRT scaling is seen only in cerium compounds?
Only on one compound
only
so
one
far.
Compound.
Yeah, so it's an important point. Only one compound I see this scaling behavior, but I mean it's a huge work. So people right now are trying to find, you know, it should be universal if it's true. So people are trying to find at least some others. Well, you could probably get rid of disorder. If you apply pressure, you have totally stoichiometric compound, so you can get this issue of disorder settled. But this is an important point and a good question. This issue of disorder is not settled. The only thing, maybe, which will be even more surprising in this compound is this local character of the scaling. So you need a theory which explains you why, for any point in the brilliant zone, you have this scaling property, which is, you know, you are close to an anti-four magnetic point, so the soft mode should be close to pi pi. And so for this kind of compound, you would have, then, just to summarize, two scenarios. One scenario, what I talked about before, like you have a condo temperature, and the condo temperature will enter the anti-four magnetic region at a finite value of temperature, so your local moments would be above the condo temperature. And actually, you would tackle the antiferromagnetic fixed point by a spin density wave instability, which would give you a theory of the Mealy's Earth type. Here, it would be a Fermi liquid. What the experiment seems to suggest, like due to some lattice coherence or something, there is some local properties of the spin which actually appear exactly at the quantum critical point, down to very low temperature. So in order to tackle the quantum critical point, you should take into account that maybe the spin, they get a bit deconfined from the heavy Fermi liquid part.
There's no transition at that line, right?
This is just a supposition. You mean there? Nobody knows exactly where is the condo temperature in the system. Yes, it's not a transition line, it's just an indication. But the only thing I want to say is you see some properties specific of local moments here in this region. And
so what do you mean J is basically J over the RKK Y interaction?
J?
J, the J. Ratio of J and J for RKK Y.
For this line, you mean?
Yes. Have a condo lattice model.
Yes. So you have the condo temperature and the RKKY.
Right, you are keeping the condo RKKYJ fixed, right?
Yeah. Well, this is not a true. But this is not a plot of the phase diagram. It's just what the experiment seems to suggest to you. Just want to mean that in this part of the phase diagram, the susceptibility can be analyzed this way, and you see, like, if you didn't have any omega here, you would have a Q-revised susceptibility. So it would mean that you have some properties on the free moments. But it still gets some kind of probably
is there a
dynamic.
In the F of Q or the Q
yes.
From pi pi to some incommensurate?
This form of the susceptibility is valid for all Qs in a brilliant zone.
Yes, but I'm saying as you go from the antiferromagnetic phase into Fermi liquid.
Yes.
Don't you get incommensurate peaks? That doesn't the.
No, it's close to pi pi for this compound.
It
but most.
Pi pi
yes, but most of the compounds are incommensurate to Y. Okay. So if I had to just summarize, this experiment tell you we have three properties which seems strong for this quantum critical point. First, hyperscaling, which means you should be always below your upper critical dimension. Then you have unusual exponents and some locality things. Okay, so in the work we have done, we decide to look at the problem from the beginning. And suppose that we have antiferromagnetism magnetism and Fermi liquid. We want to know what are the general properties of these two phases. And it seems like, very generally, in the antiferromagnetic phase can be described by wave functions which are symmetric for the spin correlation. For example, Heisenberg four magnet or even antiferromagnet magnet when you rotate, when you rotate the spin on the even sublattice, you could describe them by some bosons, which means that the underlying wave function is highly symmetric. On the other hand, when you speak about a Fermi liquid, you want to calculate Schlegel determinants, and the function wave function is highly anti-symmetric. So the question we ask is, okay, when you reach the contrarian critical point, what do the wave function wants to do? Does it want to be more symmetric, more anti-symmetric? Does it want to coexist and create some new excitation at the quantum critical point? So to address this question, we introduced some new representation of the spin.
So your model is just a Kondo lattice model.
So far, I speak only of wave function on the spin. We just to come back to what do we do when you represent a spin.
Now what's the Hamiltonian?
It will come later. Just bear with me a minute. So if you want to describe some magnetic fixed point, you would describe by the spin by a totally symmetric wave function. For example, by Schwinger boson or Ullstein-Primakov. And this would be described in terms of Young tableau for SUN, for example. By an highly symmetric Young tableau, where you see when you have a line here like that, you symmetrize the field in each box. So I don't know if you are familiar with Young tableau, but you put a field in each box and you symmetrize. Now, if you want to describe a Fermi liquid, you would use the opposite convention, and you would use Abrikosov pseudo fermion, for example, describing the spin, which means that you would put that into a Young tableau with all the fields are totally anti-symmetrized. So our idea in this kind of system, if we want to describe the critical point, it would be nice to have a representation of the spin which wouldn't choose arbitrarily between the fermions and the bosons, but enable the system to rotate between those two. And if you go from SU2 to SUN, so why do we do that? It's because we don't know, usually for strongly colored metals, you don't know the theories with SU2, so we enlarge the symmetry to SUN, which is an approximation, but which helps us to treat the system at the mean field plus, in a semi-classical way, at the mean field plus quotient corrections. Then you would interpolate naively between the fully anti-symmetric and the fully symmetric representation of the spin by some L-shaped Young tableau, where you would have a length here, which will be where the fields will be symmetrized, and on the column, at the same time, the field will be anti-symmetrized. So it's what we have done. We have introduced a large-end representation of the spin, which interpolates between the bosons and the fermions, and enables you to get some large-end treatments of some model for which you wouldn't. Or you wouldn't choose arbitrarily between the fermion and the boson. So,
questions?
Yes.
So, for example, if you are interested in the Kondo lattice model,
yes,
and eventually you want to describe the magnetic correlation, say, anti-ferromagnet or something, then this is the spin representation at each side.
Yes.
But eventually you want to form a singular.
Yes. Well, one second, I'll come to that. One second. Just let me introduce that. I will give more details. And I come back to your question at the end, actually, how to describe an anti-ferromagnet or these things. So, okay, I want to give you some technical details how this representation goes. So, for Abrikosov of pseudo-fermions, you take the spin, this is a SUN generator, acting on a fermionic basis, and in order to specify what is the Young tableau associated to this spin, you need only one constraint, the first order Casimir, which is total number of boxes in the system. When you have a Schwinger boson, you do the same thing, but you use a bosonic basis, so you have only one field with n colors, and the bosons are naturally symmetrized into a Young tableau, and still, you need only one constraint to specify the effective field theory, the field theory for your system. So now, when you want a mixed representation, what do you do? So what you can do is to take a superposition of fermions and bosons here, but in order to specify only one Young tableau, you have to add constraints. You don't want to double count your system. So what could you do naively? So you take, for example, this little example when I have the simplest L-shaped Young tableau with three boxes. I could, for example, put two bosons here in red in the line and one green fermion in the column. So as I have, I can specify my number of bosons, my number of fermions in the system, but I have an indeterminacy on what I put in the corner. I can put a fermion or a boson in a corner and it would give me the same representation. So if, for example, I can put two bosons in a corner and one fermion in a corner, but in the column. But for example, I could put two fermions in the column, one fermion in the corner, and one boson in the corner. So both of this wave function would be good to describe this spin. So to specify the first one, I would have to say, okay, I have one fermion, I have two bosons, and this is an operator which projects me what I have into the corner. So in this case, it would be two. For this system here, I would have two fermions, one boson, and my operator would be zero. So the nice thing about it, if you look at it, you would say, okay, I need three constraints to say exactly what I have into the system. But nice thing about it is actually you need only two constraints. So the first constraint should be the total number of fields you have into the system. And the second constraint, which I call wide, which is this beast here, tells you exactly projects you onto the Young tableau and doesn't tell you what is in the corner. So it leaves an indeterminacy of what you have into the corner free. So you can understand it like that. Actually, you will have two copies of the same representation, for example, this one and this one, and you can pass from one to another by applying to this wave function this operator, which will transform this wave function to this one. And by applying this operator, like destroying a boson and creating a fermion, you will transform to this one. And these operators are generators of supersymmetric rotation. So actually, the new constraints you have it, the second one, is invariant by the supersymmetric rotation.
It's obvious that 2 over q theta theta dagger, it counts what the number of fermions in the box, in the corner, it counts what in the corner.
Well, it determines which representation you have.
Look, in this case it's 2, in the other it's 0.
But so it's something about counting the corner.
Yes, look.
Corner.
Yes. The difference only between these two cases is what I have in the corner.
Okay.
And you see that this operator gives me different value from one case to another. So actually, it projects me to one state or to another.
But why does not distinguish between the two cases?
No, that's a part of it. You don't want actually to have a superposition or to project you onto one only of the representation. You want to keep this indeterminacy.
Mm-hmm.
But what you will have to add to your system is your system will have an additional symmetry, gauge symmetry, that you will have to treat out, which transform your fermions into bosons and your bosons into fermions. So by nature, if you want to describe this kind of mixed representation, that's what you have to do, and you have not really other choice but to make it supersymmetric with the second constraint, Y commutating with the generators of the supersymmetry. Okay. So that's a starting point for what we have done. Oops. So now what do we want to do? Okay, the aim for strongly correlated system like heavy fermions or ITC is not describing SUN but SU2 actually. So well, we want to implement the scheme as was done, for example, for the U1 theories of ITC or for heavy fermions, like you start by describing an SUN fixed point, and then you would concentrate on what is the new properties and new excitations for this kind of system, which would be exactly supersymmetric for y equals 0, and then trying to come back in an approximate way to SU2. So what you do, actually, you wave partition function, which is a trace of the Hamiltonian with projection on the constraint Q and Y. So Y was determining exactly the Segondian tableau, and Q was the total number of box. And actually, you obtain another additional symmetry to your system, So when you retract, you rotate fermion and bosonic spin by a generator of SU11, spasmodic generator, you would obtain a system which is invariant by this symmetry. So in the remaining of the talk, I would like to give you a flavor of what we have done so far and what are the ideas to continue with this approach. So we first wanted to describe the Condorlet-Lattice Hamiltonian. Just as an example. So actually for the moment I have introduced only the localized spin of impurities, so I cannot speak yet of formulation of the cuprate with a TG model or Hubbard model, but this we have done too, it will just come later. So in this Hamiltonian, just as I mentioned before, you have conduction electrons described this way, and then you have the coupling between the spin of the localized fermions and the conduction electrons. But in this case, the coupling between these two spins will have two components. One component, which is the coupling of the fermionic part of the spin, and one component is the coupling between bosonic part of the spin. And then you would have to have the constraint. So you see at the first sight, what you can say is the first component is of order 1 over n, and second component is of order 1, and not is of order n, sorry, and the second is of order 1. And the thing you gain compared to the treatment of Condorlet-Lattice with only fermions is the magnetism appears, magnetism would be described by the bosonic part, and it appears at order 1 instead of 1 over n. So you gain an order of magnitude in order to describe the magnetism, which was a problem for these systems. So now, if you remember this second constraint, so the parameter xi here, which is a Lagrange multiplier between for the second constraints, actually it's a parameter which drives the whole couplings into my big impurity. So if I vary this parameter, I can go from a representation which is totally antisymmetric to the representation which is totally symmetric, and it would mean physically increasing, tuning the magnetism, the Horn coupling inside the impurity. So now, when you do Hubbard-Stratonovich decoupling to have effective theory of fields, you obtain a Grassmannian analog of your bosonic field you would have with a purely fermionic theory. So in the usual description of fermions, the bosonic field were mediating the fermi-liquid interaction. Now, due to the fact that you have these bosonic counterparts, you have a Grassmannian analog, which actually mediates interaction between bosons. So it mediates the magnetism.
The Lagrange multiplier is a global constraint? You just impose the constraint globally or
no.
Side by side?
No, side by side. It's a gauge. It's a gauge.
So lambda and c are functions of j also.
I.
J.
Yeah.
So
yes. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Which you. So just before we go into formalism, looking at this Hamiltonian, why do we believe there's a phase transition? If I make J larger, the RKKY coupling may also become larger, right?
The only belief for which there is phase transition in Condor systems are due to the Gdonyatz argument, which is a really hand-wavy argument. If you calculate the RKKY, the RKKY temperature as a function of J, it would go in J square. And the Condor temperature would go like an exponential, and it would give you the phase diagram I showed in the beginning. So it's an important question, and I want to stress that for this model of AU fermions, you don't even have one formalism for which you could describe the phase diagram. At least at the same time, the magnetic part and the Fermi liquid in a kind of theory with a small parameter like a large N theory. This formalism doesn't exist.
Numerical computation at least Hamiltonian, right? Are there indications of the
basis? This I don't know about numerical computations. It's 3D, you know. Probably you can do it in 2D. I don't know about it.
Certainly.
this.
Yeah, what is this?
This is an open problem.
Yeah.
We don't know what
it is. If you take heavy fermions, then e to the minus j is supposed to be a very small number.
Yeah.
So how can j squared be smaller than that?
Yeah, right.
So I guess the Donner criteria itself is very problematic because it compares perturbation theory in J to a non-perturbative one over n expansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not clear that you're allowed to do that. So I think the belief is that there's extra Fermi surface effects, nesting, problems which have to do with details that are not in the spherical condom model that would give you the phase transition.
Well, let's put it like that. If you look at the Kondo lattice model with a Fermionic representation of spin, you miss the magnetism. The magnetism is actually at the order 1 over n squared or 1 over n third, depends how where you count. So it's totally beyond semi-classical perturbation theory. So you would describe quite correctly, or at least qualitatively, the Fermi liquid phase, but you would have no hint of the magnetism. So to reach the quantum critical point would be difficult.
So the Kondo spins are on the three-dimensional cubic lattice?
Yes. Depends on the compound, the lattice can have different symmetry.
But then epsilon k is just the tie binding?
Yes, okay. Yes.
So that itself may give you an anti-fermionic through some effective.
Yes.
Through nesting.
Through nesting. Well, okay, it's an open question. You can add some nesting too. Okay.
So one needs to specify the thing.
No. 1 second. There is no nesting in heavy fermions.
No, but once you put this on a lattice.
No, you can usually take a spherical Fermi surface and.
Is that a consistent thing to do? You put the Kondo spin on a lattice, right?
Yeah.
The band structures are very complicated.
Yeah.
The experimental
evidence is usually in this system you have no nesting. I don't know.
Right.
No,
so your model is a cubic lattice, but the Fermi.
No, my model. Yes. It's just a Fermi spherical Fermi surface.
What filling are the electrons in that sleep question? Well, half filling, then one may imagine nesting in form.
No, half filling you get the insulator, Kondo insulator.
Yes. So you have to be just below. Just a bit below half filling, close to half filling, but a bit below half filling, so it convex.
So actually, you can study single input Kondo problem and also Kondo lattice model. So what makes the difference?
1 second, I'm coming to that. Okay. Just want to give you also a flavor how you work with that. So you can gauge fit this additional mode. And the result of it for this kind of system, and it would give you some interaction between the gauge phase would acquire some dynamics here. And here is a Lagrange multiplier of the second constraints, which relate, which appear in this gauge field. Okay, so it's just a more complicated gauge theory for the system with additional modes, gauge modes.
So you want
It's SU11 because you have this additional system. But I mean, it's the same philosophy as how you would gauge some system in a U1 gauge theory. But here you have additional gauge mode, which would correspond actually to the when you rotate the Sebastian-Ratanovich field, you rotate by Grossmann variables that you can call, I don't know, Gluino or what you want. And these Grassmann variables now mediate the interaction between bosons and fermions in your system here, like Gluino. So actually, it's kind of a nice picture because for the composite heavy fermion, it would be described naturally, as I said, by some fermionic field or degree of freedom. The magnetic excitation would be described by a boson degree of freedom. And suppose you attack the transition from the Fermi liquid phase. When it wants to become magnetic, it kind of deconfines and a boson. Well, it's an idea. I mean, it's just an analogy. And you create a bosonic excitation, but as a result of it, you would need to, your theory gives you a fermionic gauge mode, which is generated at the transition at the same time.
I'm confused why A, that the gauge field doesn't have any space time index.
No, it should have, sorry.
Oh, it should have. Okay.
Yes.
But
yes.
You only wrote down this the time component just for simplicity.
Yes.
Time,
yes. Yes. It's a local. Yeah. Okay, so it's basically maybe the interest. You have a new gauge mode, new excitation. What does it give at the transition? Does it become massless? Or any idea? Okay. So far, with this formalism, we have treated thoroughly the one impurity condo.
This gauge boson in your transparency is called a Guino.
Yeah, well, no, this is the gauge fermion actually, but I don't know, you can invent a name for.
Get into this, you made some comments on the transition.
Yes.
But these are not understood how you describing either phase in this formulation. What's the Fermi liquid? I mean, it's the same with the condensed, or no?
Well, the Fermi liquid actually in this formalism would be well understood on the usual condo lattice model when you describe the spin of impurity only with fermions, and the fermions hybridize naturally even at the mean field with a conduction electron, because the hybridization is a boson actually, it's a bosonic field, and the Fermi liquid phase would be described in this formalism by the by the fermionic part of your component of the spin.
What happens to gauge fields and
I mean, in the U1 theory or in this one?
This one, either. I'm not
well, actually, for the condo lattice model, we have not worked out exactly what this fermionic gauge field are going to do in this Fermi liquid. But for the U1 theory, they acquire mass. So that's it like that it goes. Okay, I'll just to tell you on what we have tested our representative spin of the simplest, not maybe not the simplest, but model we could think of, which is a condo impurity, because we hope that we could have some exact result to compare to. But it appears that these systems, when you have a mixed representation of impurities, are not integrable by beta and zets. So this kind of result were not available. But we test with some LJ a la Nozia-Blandin to have the phase diagram of the one impurity problem. And it appears that for these systems, this representation generates a new phase. So you know, for the usual one impurity problem, the RG flow flows to strong coupling with a scoupling constant. And it means the strong coupling in J, the interaction J, and it means that when J is very large, this fixed point would mean that the impurity is screened, has trapped. The strong grouping fixed point has trapped one electron, and the impurity is screened once. It happens that for certain range of parameter, just let me explain it, for certain range of parameter, this strong grouping fixed point becomes unstable, and this spin model has another phase. Which is actually a two-stage condo, which means that the spin will be screened twice. So I would like just to stress first that we have this new behavior of the spin, which would be stressed one, and it might be, it might remind you of a new paroxysis component, which is a valence bond condo model, where you see exactly this kind of effect. So I wouldn't put my head like this is the solution for that. You know, it's still very controversial. But just to say that this kind of effect has been observed. So this compound in the ultraviolet, it is a mixed valence. So it has some vanadium with 3+, which have spin 1, and 4+, which have spin 1/2. And so it has an effective mixture of spin 1 and spin 1/2. The room temperature, you see only the spin 1/2 part, so it has undergone already a screening, mixed valence screening. And when you lower again the temperature, it undergoes another transition, and the spin goes to zero. So you see a two-stage screen for the system. Yes?
I think I'm missing something there. So you have a new representation for the physical spin operator, right?
Yes.
Now, why is it that say again why it is you can't treat the ordinary SUN condo problem with that for which you have exact results?
Okay. It's a bit technical. You mean for this better on that thing? Or
any technique you like.
The representation is...
If I compute a physical quantity, why can't I compare it?
Okay, for SU2, it would you come back to the usual Kondo impurity problem.
Yeah.
When you have a difference, is when you go for a larger group of symmetry for SU3, SU4 to SUN. So our method enables you to actually describe the large n for SUN. And you can...
It gives you a result for SU2.
The result for SU2 doesn't change towards the single Kondo impurity. What is different is would be for SU3, for example.
Okay, so
you have enlarged the symmetry of the spin.
Excuse me. You have a theory, a large theory, which you then obtain results for n equals 2.
No. For the moment, we just treated it. The only thing I wanted to show in this diagram is, for this large n, when you enlarge the symmetry, you obtain new phases in your system. Now, whether these phases are valid for SU2 or not. For this kind of impurity model, you can work out, not exactly, but you can do the LG analysis of the strong coupling fixed point for any n, not only large n. So you would recover, or is it for the large n, but for n finite, you can exactly see when you have this new phase, and for SU2, you don't see it.
So I mean, I still don't understand. So. This two-stage Kondo business, is it the result of a single impurity model or...
Yes,
or
yes.
Kondo-Lux?
No. It's a single impurity
single
Kondo
impurity.
Model. Look, we treated that because we wanted to be sure that our large n was giving us something that we could test. And we tested it by doing some analysis of the strong coupling fixed point, as a second-order perturbation theory, quantum second-order perturbation theory. And we were able to match the mean field, the large n result with fluctuation with a strong coupling fixed point. So probably won't have time to give some details. Just rapidly, when you fix your gauge of your field, you obtain this kind of effecting interaction between now an electron, a fermion, which is hybridized with the conduction C, and the bosons. And you see that the sign of this effective interaction, this is for large n, depends exactly of the sign of psi, which was the Lagrangian multiplier of the constraint. And you know, if you follow Nozia-Blandin, that the sign of the effective interaction determines you whether the strong coupling fixed point is stable or unstable. And so you can compare these two things, and what could happen actually physically is if you take this kind of moment here, totally antiform magnetic, it would get totally screened. So here S equal 1/2, get totally screened. So now if you take the spin larger than 1/2, let's start from this way. If you take the spin larger than 1/2, but the number of fermions in this box is here, the number of fermions I put in this box is larger than n over 2, than n over 2, you get the spin screened once. And when the number of conduction electron which screen here is smaller than n over 2, you get the two-stage screening. So, well, okay, maybe it was too technical, but I mean, you have new parameters in your theory, and you have a new phase, and you can check explicitly with RG that this new phase indeed appears.
Can you say something about charge
behavior? Yes, that's what I want to come to that. So. You might wonder how I was able to describe a valence bond system with a spin representation only. So actually, you can generalize your supersymmetric representation of the spin to Slev boson plus Slev fermion system. So in the same way, you would have generalized fermionic and bosonic representation of the spin. You can take Slev boson and Slev fermion system, and now SUN would become just SUN cross 1. And you can derive all the Hobart operator for the system.
Wait, before I understand what you're doing, if you're taking your Kondo lattice problem and taking out some of the spins and leaving them with bones that move around, is that what you're doing?
So far, I had treated the Kondo lattice model, but it's more general. I just want a generalization of the Hobart operator for Slev boson or for Slev fermion. with which I would be able to describe some valence systems or some Hubbard model or some TG model.
Oh, so this is
yes,
model,
yes, right? Yes. So as soon as you have this generalized representation for the spin for the Hubbard operator in terms of fermions and bosons, you can tackle the charge properties and the TG model or Hubbard model. Okay, so it's exactly the same kind of things, and you can express also your representation with two constraints. You can check that. So this would enable you, yeah, to describe some TG and some Hubbard model. So just want to mention now, to be quite frank, mention the problems we have encountered dealing with this system. So to answer your question quite a long time ago, Young-Beck, if you want to describe actually an anti-four magnet or four magnetic phase, what you would have to do is to use on one sublattice one representation, and on the other sublattice the conjugate representation of the spin. So actually, when would you do it naively 2 by 2, you would obtain a singlet when you do your tensor product naively. So the problem we had for the Kondo lattice is, even though you gain an order in 1 over n with describing these bosons, your KKY interaction is still one order too low to be able straight away to describe the Wool phase diagram of the heavy fermion system, the lattice Kondo model. So what we'll have to do is to introduce by hand the RKKY interaction, so to do a Kondo Heisenberg model. On the other hand, if we just had a look at what would give just a pure bosonic Kondo Heisenberg model, and roughly by using your spin wave and Kondo screening, you are able to get this phase of the phase diagram in a semi-exact way, but you have absolutely no indication in that case of what would be the Fermi liquid phase. So of course this kind of system will introduce now a lot of fields. You would have the equivalent on the lattice of the Plaquette field. You would have, for example, for the pi flux phase, you would have some fermionic equivalent of it. And what could be interesting for the high TC is, like, even though you would be able to condense the slave boson, you would still have an additional soft mode, or, well, fermionic mode, and you would have to see whether this gauge mode scatters in a different phase compared to the U1 theory. So that's interesting, could be. So hope I gave you a flavor and it was not understandable. And just would like to summarize what we have done. And so first, like, there was some very unusual phenomenology for quantum critical points between magnetic phase and heavy fermi liquid phase, with at least for neutron scattering on one experiment, hyperscaling, locality, and unusual exponent. So we have generalized to tackle that the Largeon limit of spin representation in order to interpolate between Abrikosov pseudo fermions and trigger bosons. And it gives you naturally a supersymmetric formulation of your theory of your Lagrangian, which gives you some supersymmetric rotation you have to gauge out and some new gauge mode.
Catherine, logically, this idea, your idea to use the L-shaped representation,
yes,
that's completely independent of our Gen limit, right? You can do this.
No, but no. It's important. I mean, to have a field theory that you can tackle with some small parameter.
Oh yeah, if you want to do a large N approximation, feel free. But in general, you can always use this technique, use these representations to study any.
For a finite N.
Yeah, for finite N.
Yeah, true. Well, you could do that. The nice things with these things is you have only two fields. Of course, you can always represent any kind of Young tableau, even with a thickness with I don't know how many fields and I don't know many constraints. The nice thing here is you have only two fields with different colors, two constraints, and you have a perfectly well-defined Largeon limit, which is an additional thing in your.
I see,
you can
so
scale, you mean, in both the lengths and the.
No, but for example, if I want, I can go home and apply this to any spin model with just SU2 and spin half.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, so what we have tested so far is the physics given for the one condo impurity, some new physics of the screen. The spin can be screened twice, two-stage condo screening. And, well, we have generalized for the Hubbards and the TG representation with interpolation between safe fermion and safe boson, so you can describe a Hubbard model and describe again all these systems. Okay, I will stop there.
So actually I have a question. So coming back to this question of conjugate representation.
Yes.
So it seems to me that your L-shaped Jung-Pev law is not very convenient, right?
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Maybe only one of your representations is useful.
Yeah. No. No, you can always describe conjugate representation by doing some particle hole symmetry on your field theory. It's technical, I can show you that if you're interested. So for the Young tableau, the representation is this one, and the conjugate would be this one. Let me see. You know, it's what fields. It's this one, but you have to rotate it. And if you do a particle hole symmetry on your fields, you always have a description of that. So this is, I can show you if you want, no problem.
Can you say something how you treat the constraint field in the large end? Is it just the average?
Exactly as you would treat in the U1.
So it's just the average?
Yes,
value.
Yes. For this question, nothing has changed.
This is a question that came up now. Does it seem like the quantum critical point is supersymmetric?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, for a system, the first question would be just to have the phase diagram, mm-hmm. and with the two phases.
Well, you say the one phase is best described by a mean field theory that
yes.
is like condensing
yes. Yes.
the bosons,
yes.
and the
yes.
other phase is a mean field theory that
yes.
is best described by
yeah.
Lippmann Klein fermions.
Yes.
So is it that?
Okay, let me just tell you, we had a problem that the bosons with the usual condo lattice model. The bosonic order parameter was still one order too low to be able to describe it in the mean field theory or in a Gaussian theory. So what we will use instead of that is a Kondo-Eisenberg model to describe the two phase and see whether in this model some physics arrives there. But this still has not been performed. So, you know, it's still not done. So in order to describe the quantum critical point, I need first to find it, you know, to have a mean field fast diagram where I have this in order with one theory.
Yeah, but that's exactly the problem of the two mean field theories. They don't give you the
yes.
transition.
Yes. Yes.
So the two mean field theory don't give you the same critical point. They both have critical points.
No, if you.
No, but this you will get within the framework of the Kondo-Eisenberg model. You will get that.
The
Kondo-Eisenberg. So you add by hand the Akakawa interactions. So you would get that.
Yeah, but that looks like a first order transition, right? It's just comparison of.
Well, it would be a first order if you didn't have this supersymmetric thing. But in that case, you would leave the system choose whether it wants to represent the Heisenberg with some more bosonic character or the Fermi liquid with some more fermionic.
And then you get a second order transition?
Yes, I'm pretty sure about that. Well, we can talk about.
Okay.
So actually, it's interesting, like you wouldn't just have a two fluid version of something. But you would have an additional mode which naturally interpolates between the two fluids and leaves you choose between one of them. Okay.
I mean, the other side is not L-shaped, right?
Well, Jung-Beck, you come in my office, I show you how to do that, to do the conjugate. This is a tricky point, but okay.